Good morning, Tampa Bay, and welcome to Between the Lines here at world-famous Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, America's number one local sports bar as voted by USA Today. We are in our Body Armor Coca-Cola studios, and we will be live every Sunday morning from 11 to 12, covering the best of the NFL, college football, and baseball, from the minors to the majors. I'm Tristan with my co-host Jake, and we are live on Radio St. Pete and YouTube. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at Between the Lines Show and TikTok at Between the Lines Hour. We are also joined in studio by our Buccaneers specialist, Aiden McDonough. Now, let's get into the first segment. Now, get ready because it's our Bucs pregame show. All right. I would like to lead off with our hot segments. Or our hot takes.
Yep.
Hot segment. I'm all over the place this morning.
You want to go first or what are we doing here?
Sure. I can go first. I believe you went first last week, so it's only fair that I go first. My hot take is that Byrum Brown, the quarterback of the USF Bulls, is a legitimate Heisman contender in 2025.
I don't know how much I agree with that, to be honest. You know, when you look at the Heisman contender, especially for quarterbacks, I hate going by it, but we've seen it time and time again. It is so much dependent on record.
We see
it time and time again. If a quarterback doesn't make the college football playoffs, the odds of them winning the Heisman is just, it's unrealistic. It's just not going
to
happen.
A lot of people like to argue, you know, they're confused because they thought that the Heisman Award was granted to the player that's most crucial to the team, almost like an MVP award's granted in the NFL. But I honestly have to say, the USF Bulls record currently, 8-3, is the best record they've had in really since 2007. Not only that, but also it's only the eighth time in program history that they've had a record of 8-3. And if they go to 9-3, it'll be the fourth time in program history that they will have had that record. So, you know, there is a lot to be said about making the college football playoffs if they can even get close to it, which is really unlikely as far as now, unless a lot of big teams lose out. But, you know, I just think that he's contributed so much, not only to the USF Bulls, and it's not even a bad team with a bad record. It's a great team with a solid record. And I think he's just shown everything he can every single time he sees the field. And I think he deserves it. He's one of the most deserving of it in the all of college football right now.
You know, I think he's definitely up there, but I don't know if I'd go as far to say as he's the leading Heisman contender. But I'll go ahead and get on to my hot take here. And my hot take is that if Arch Manning enters the NFL draft before his senior season is over, it will be a Shedeur Sanders situation all over again.
I don't even know if that's a hot take. I completely agree with that.
And, you know, the reason I call that a hot take is because if you go on online right now, which obviously there's a lot of trolls, but there are people on Twitter who genuinely believe that Arch Manning will be a first-round pick and will enter the draft after this year, and I believe that is complete, just utter nonsense at this point, you know? There is just no way that he decides to, one, enter the draft, and two, he will not be a first-round pick.
Yeah, no, I actually agree a lot. A lot of the big thing with Shedeur Sanders was just the hype that was built around him. You know, he was so overhyped. He was the son of Deion Sanders. He had looked pretty good at Colorado for a while. But, you know, everyone expected him to go in the first through third rounds, and he fell to what? It was the fifth round. Yeah, and, you know, that's just partially because of the hype that was built around him was so tall, he couldn't really live up to his name at that point. And not only that, but he played in kind of an eggshell conference. He didn't really do that well in his eggshell conference. He lost to Colorado State. He lost in some big games. And, you know, that's why he fell. And we've seen a lot of that out of Arch Manning this year at Texas.
And he'll be starting this week. I know a lot of people are excited to watch that, but I personally will not be watching that game. I do not have any interest in watching that.
I was very low on Shedeur Sanders. I never really liked him, especially coming out of college, even before the draft slide. But, you know, still, I will be excited to see, you know, Kevin Stefanski and the quarterback change that he has to deal with in Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Stefanski, in my opinion, is a great coach, but I don't think when you have to bounce around from a shell of former Deshaun Watson,
Is he still even on the roster anymore?
There's some news with that. He will be traveling with a team to mentor Shedeur Sanders in his first NFL start today.
That's interesting.
Which was pretty interesting to me because, obviously, we've seen in the past Deshaun Watson has kind of been careless about the team even when he was playing. So
yeah.
But do you want to get into some jerseys now?
Sure.
I'll let you go first. That way I'm not going back and forth here, but...
Yeah, well, obviously, if you've been watching the show for a little bit, you can tell that this is a repeat jersey for me. I've worn this before. But I'm just here to talk about Andre Vasilevsky and the run that he's on right now. He's completely flipped his play style since the beginning of the year. He started out slow, as most Lightning players do, but he completely flipped it around. If you were watching the game the other night, he saved the game-winning shot from the other team that eventually went down in a few passes to Jake Dentzel, which he then put it in the back of the net and won the entire game. Andre Vasilevsky is just playing so well right now. He's had so many shots on goal. I think he's led the NHL in the shots on goal and how many he's had and how many he's deflected. But he's just been doing so good. He's been the forefront of this Tampa Bay Lightning defense and next to Kucherov. And I admire his play style. I can't believe he's been playing as well as he has.
And he's been doing it for so long, so it's so impressive.
Yeah, he's a real tenured player. He's one of those guys you never want to see leave your team, not only just because he's a hallmark of this franchise now, but also because you never want to have to play against him. He's so dangerous, especially in the big moments.
It's like a Mike Evans, Chris Godwin kind of situation with him and Kucherov, you know?
Definitely.
Now, getting onto my jersey, I am wearing the best player of my generation of the MLB. I am wearing a Mike Trout jersey. And the reason I wanted to wear a Mike Trout jersey is because I wanted to bring up a discussion. And going into the offseason, there's been a lot of rumors of a lot of really big-name players, Fernando Tatis, Bryce Harper. But I wanted to ask the question, do you think the Angels should trade Mike Trout to better have their better chance of selling the team?
Well, if you're talking about from a financial standpoint of selling the team, I think at the end of the day, it's probably yes. But if you were talking about the product that you're putting on the field itself, I don't think you should. And that's just because, one, when you talk about hallmarks of a franchise players, I couldn't name a single franchise player.
Mike Trout's at the top of the list
sport. Maybe Bryce Harper, maybe?
No, because he's played for multiple teams, you know.
Yeah, just the time he spent in Philly,
yeah,
you know.
Mike Trout is a true franchise superstar, and I would
homegrown.
And you know, at the end of the day, I would like to say that I would hate to see him leave, but at the end of the day, I want him to leave the Angels so badly, just for the better chance of him getting a ring. I want him to go to the Phillies.
Yeah,
it's a match made in heaven. Him and Bryce Harper in the outfield. I mean, I guess Bryce Harper is playing first base now, and maybe they would move Mike Trout to DH with, you know, a potential Kyle Schwarber absence. But at the end of the day, Mike Trout is the best player of this generation, and I'll even say that.
Definitely, and that's part of the reason why I talk about when you look at the product that you're putting on the field itself, I think there's a lot of key things to build around Mike Trout. That's the reason why the Angels haven't touched the World Series in recent years. And I think that, you know, you shouldn't be going out to just try to trade away a big name like that to, you know, get your chances better of selling a team rather than just try to win something and then raise the value of your team overall.
Yeah, but it really is unfortunate because I would love to see Mike Trout win a ring with the Angels, but
yeah,
we all know that's not going to happen. Their offense is good, but it seems like no matter who they've signed,
at least not anytime soon.
You say Kikuchi, even going out and signing big free agents, Tyler Anderson a few years back, they cannot put good pitching on the field, and they have to be better about it. There's no way you can't get a single pitcher to succeed for your team. But moving on here, we've got some Rays news to talk about. And it was another pretty big week of the offseason. There was a lot of non-tenders, a lot of DFAs, some roster additions. And if you want to see an in-depth dive to all of those moves, you can go on Instagram at Between the Lines Show. And a few days ago, we posted an update after the non-tender deadline of all of the players that the Rays have added and subtracted, and why you can look forward or maybe be doubtful of the additions and subtractions. But just getting into some big names here, there was a pretty big name that was DFA'd this non-tender deadline, and that is Christopher Morel. Now, the conversation I want to bring up there is, should Rays fans be worried about the big packages they get from big-name players? We've seen it in the past with Evan Longoria. That trade, they got nothing out of it. We've seen it with Blake Snell, and I know I'm naming some kind of older ones, but it seems like every time they trade one of these super big-name players, and then Isaac Paredes again, it seems like the packages really just haven't been turning out as much as they have with, you know, kind of minor deals, like when they traded Jake Bowers to get you know, superstar level players. So it's
yeah.
Is it something to be concerned about, or is that something that you're kind of just putting past and you're looking at is like they lost the trade, it's whatever, it happens.
I feel like if it was something to be concerned about, we should have been concerned about it a long time ago, especially with Stu Sternberg as the previous owner, just because that was a part of what he played. That was the game he played, especially in, you know, any time he encouraged Eric Neander to do specific things, or just Eric Neander, you know, operated on his own, where they were just trying to get the most value they could for the least amount of money, if that makes sense. You know,
yeah.
it goes back to that Moneyball ideology of just what the best you can get for the cheapest amount. And I wouldn't say to be concerned about it. I would just kind of be weary of it, if that makes sense. Just kind of be on the lookout. Don't have big expectations for this team, especially in the first year under a new ownership group. Although Eric Neander's still there, although, you know, many of the things are still going to be very similar to the as they were last season. I do think, though.
Well, we're not going to say similar now that we're out of, you know, Tampa and back in St. Petersburg.
Oh, yeah. Things are going to be much better. I'm not going to say similar to last year. I'm going to say hopefully similar.
Play on the field could be similar. But
yeah.
But in terms of overall feel of the season, I'm going to feel a lot better even if we lose 20 more games.
Hopefully a lot much more similar to 2023 minus one shortstop.
Ooh. Yikes. That's a turn I don't know if we wanted to take there.
Yeah.
But some other updates. We've got the Rays adding a top catcher prospect in Dominic Keegan to the 40-man roster. Now, that's a guy that I am super excited to see play. I mean, I've looked at it for years, and Dominic Keegan is a true prospect. He's a above-average hitter. He's got real pop in that bat, even though the homers don't look like it. The doubles are there, and the defense is real. So, are you looking forward to see Dominic Keegan play this year?
Definitely, without a doubt. I mean, he just, you know, getting his shot at the bigs, like, it's really big for anyone. It was big for Carson Williams last season. You know, it was big for, Jake Mangum, although he was a little older. It's just such a big opportunity for these guys, and I just really hope he seizes the opportunity and he runs with it, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, kind of on the same topic with Dominic Keegan is, I will preface this to Rays fans and say, don't expect big things out of him coming out of the gates, you know. Although Carson Williams did have some big moments, we saw with him, he kind of struggled, you know. He had some decent games in there, but overall he did struggle throughout the later half of the season when he did get caught up.
Dominic Keegan, man, Durham Bulls legend.
Oh, boy. But, you know, there's definitely a lot to preface with prospects coming up, and you can't expect everybody to be like Junior Caminero where they just succeed immediately. It takes time for these guys to really adjust to Major League hitting, and it could be 2 or 3 years from now by the time we actually see Dominic Keegan really make a big impact.
Definitely. I completely agree. And, you know, I think that's the thing with especially today's MLB and, you know, just sports in general, is everyone expects these young guys to perform at such a high level so quick. And if they don't, they want to ship them away as fast as they can. I think you have to really let these guys develop, get their bats developed at the bigs for a little bit, you know, give them a true opportunity. Don't just give them, you know, an opportunity where they would still be considered a rookie at the end of the season. I feel like give them some time, work them into the rotation. Get them, you know, the at-bats they need and get their confidence as high as they can before, you know, they really start to expect something out of them. I would say, what do you think a good mark is for, you know, how long it should take for a player to be developed in the bigs before they either get sent down or traded?
You know, that's a really good question. And I think that really does depend year by year and the player's age, for one, as well as where the player grew up. You know, we see it typically. Dominican Republican players and Venezuelan players are much better out of the gates because they are so much mature and they've grown up around baseball for so long that they really just continue to kind of make a big impact as soon as possible. And so I think what we do see is a lot of guys really want to kind of, you know, come out here and, you know, I don't want to say American players because that sounds wrong, but definitely players who, you know, like Carson Williams, for example, coming up as a 21-year-old, although he did have such a short sample size, he didn't come out of the gates and play absolutely amazing. You know, we do want guys like him to completely turn into amazing prospects, but I definitely do want to see him. I think at the end of the day, it will be around 28 years old when they really should break out. I think that's the latest possible age. You
definitely
should see a guy break out.
I completely agree. And then you have some, you know, kind of unicorn stories, like with Jake Mangum, where he was, what, 28 when he got his first real major league at starts and at-bats, especially in this rotation this last season.
Yeah, and he's 29 years old, turning 30. So, you know, it's definitely a situation of – it takes guys different amounts of time to mature.
Definitely. I completely agree.
Now, I heard you have some Lightning updates for us.
Yeah, so the Lightning in the last few, you know, the games they've had have been absolutely incredible. They've been on a great run so far. The Lightning, just last night, they beat the Capitals 5-3. It was a great game. Johansson was at goalie, you know, our goaltender. He was filling in for Andrei Vasilevskiy. Can't play every big game, can't make every big moment happen. But, you know, Brandon Hagel had 4 points, 2 goals, 2 assists. Kucherov had 3 points off 1 goal and 2 assists. Cirelli had 2 points off of a goal and an assist. Bjorkstrand had a point off of a goal and 0 assists. You know, Chernak scored a point. Moser scored a point. Gensel scored a point. Radish scored a point. There's so many guys. I think the real important part of this Lightning team right now is that they're spreading the puck around. They're not relying on one guy too much. You know, not one Braden Point, not one Kucherov, you know, not one individual. They are really, like I said, spreading the puck around, getting it out to as many young guys, especially as they can, especially from the Syracuse Crunch. And they're just trying to make as many big plays happen. And I feel like that's where John Cooper as a manager really excels. You know, He knows how to work these young guys in the perfect moments, and he gets these. When he gets a hold of a game, he doesn't let it go. It's very rare that you see under a John Cooper, you know, team that you let the defense folds later in the game or they give up many big shots, especially when they're on an offensive roll.
Yeah, definitely. I think you explained that really well. You know, I really do like the defense that this Lightning team has been putting out a lot recently.
Definitely. I completely agree. And, you know, they're playing such tooth and nail defense. You know, they're really getting physical. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of fights in the last couple of games, but you can definitely tell that the spirit's all there.
Yeah, and you can tell if they do get into a fight, they do not care. They
drop the mitts, dude.
Yeah, they will go into it, and it's not like a scared situation. They're definitely playing aggressive. They're playing physical, and it's overall a great brand of hockey that they're playing.
Without a doubt.
Now, should we get into some college football here?
I think so.
So, obviously, big USF Bulls game last night.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't necessarily a big game for them. However, it was a big loss for the University of Alabama Birmingham Dragons.
Obviously, at the end of the day, you have to win that game if you're a USF Bull. But, I mean, is there a situation where you think the Bulls can still make the playoffs?
I think there is, like I said earlier when I was giving my hot take about Byron Brown potentially being a Heisman contender. I think that the USF Bulls can possibly make it in the top 25 AP polls for the college football playoffs. I don't necessarily know about the playoffs themselves, but I at least think top 25. As you know, many other teams we've seen this season, it's been kind of weird. A lot of teams have been losing, you know, games they should have been winning. Almost kind of like, you know, USF at Memphis. Although Memphis is a great contender, you know, they should have won that game. They lost it in the last 2 minutes. But I think there is a potential. There is a universe where USF continues to make the college football playoffs.
I completely agree. You know, I think right now it still is a long shot. But if you win at home against Rice this week, coming up, you know, there is a chance that they can make the playoffs. But you know, you really do have to rely on some big teams losing some games, and that's not a situation you ever want to be in.
Definitely. A game I would personally like to highlight was that Oregon versus USC game. Oregon, ranked number 7 in the nation versus number 15th ranked USC in the nation, beat them 42-27. That was a huge win for Oregon. Obviously, they're ranked much higher than them, but they are both ranked teams, and it shouldn't have been that much of a one-slated loss, but it definitely was, and you know, that was very impressive by the Oregon offense. They were just chugging down the field the whole game. Another one was Pitt beating Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets, the 16th ranked in the nation Yellow Jackets, 42-28, although Pitt was completely unranked. That was a big upset for many, although many, you know, were saying that Georgia Tech did leave it all out on the field. Another upset was TCU beating the 23rd ranked in the nation Houston, 17-14. That's a big one. Yeah, an inner Texas matchup there, Texas Christian versus Houston. Arizona State University beat Colorado. Shedeur Sanders' alma mater, who will be starting for the Cleveland Browns today, 42-17. That was of kind of note. Other than that, there weren't many big games. Wisconsin did beat 21 overall ranked Illinois, 27-10. So there were a couple of upsets sprinkled into there. But for a lot of the top 25 teams, it was kind of an easier week as they wind down on the season, getting ready for the college football playoffs. They didn't want to have to play many starters. They didn't want to have to, bend their backs just to, win a game. So I think that's a strategical move by a lot of these, presidents of the scheduling committees.
Now, you bring up college football, and I want to ask you this. With the college football playoffs expanding from 4 teams to 12, year or two back, do you think this is something that's going to continue to happen where it's going to expand to, maybe next to the top 25 with the number one ranked team getting a bye? And then, a few years later, it's going to be 64 teams, and it's just going to turn into this big March Madness bracket, or do you think it's going to stay at 12?
Well, for the time being, I have to say in the next 5 years, I see it staying at 12 just because of how long it took college football to go from 4 to 12. And I think that it is an ever-evolving kind of market that is always growing, and a lot of people are watching college football now, especially as, colleges are always growing and getting bigger and programs are being started. But I do have to say I would like to see someday college football kind of be of a March Madness sort of system where there's a lot of teams playing for an equal chance to win the Natty at the end of the year. And I really do like that kind of idea. I think that's a great idea. However, the reason I don't see that necessarily happening in the next 5 to even 10 years is just because of the college football fundamentalists and how many classic bowl games there are and how many classic playoff games there are. The Cotton Bowl, the Cheez-It Bowl. All these big bowls that, really mean a lot to these teams and a lot of these programs and a lot to college football as an entirety. I just don't really see that happening in the next 5 to 10 years, although it is an interesting prospect and I would like to see it.
I honestly personally would not like to see it because I think you should earn your right to the playoffs. And, do I think 12 teams is enough? Maybe with how many teams there are in college football, maybe I wouldn't hate at 25. 4 was definitely too little. There was definitely no reason for it to be a 4-team college football playoffs, but I would like to see it, maybe go up to 25. But after that, once you get more than that, it's rubbish. We'll say that. It's rubbish at this point.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways it can be, but, I think it's up to what the college football playoff committee thinks is best. And, I've not trusted their judgment before, but it's up to them. So
yeah. And, we saw it a few years back with FSU not making the playoffs. So, there really is no trusting that judgment.
Yeah, our Buccaneers specialist in studio, Aiden McDonough, is a pretty big FSU fan himself. So I bet you was pretty upset about that one.
Absolutely. Now, one last college football game that I want to highlight, and this might not seem like a big game to some people, but the University of North Texas went on to Rice and played away and beat them 56-24. Now, the reason for that is because Drew Mastemaker. How about him, huh?
Yeah, no, absolute crazy performance, especially passing the ball. He didn't run the ball a whole lot, but just an insane performance.
Now, bringing up Drew Mastemaker, do you think he's going to be getting, SEC-level offers? Do you think he's going to be getting offers from, an Alabama-level SEC team, or do you think it's going to go down to Arkansas, or do you think it won't even be SEC?
Well, the only reason I wouldn't react like super crazy to that is just because he was playing Rice, and Rice isn't a great school.
They're not a horrible school, though, but then again, look at the team he's on.
Yeah, but, University of North Texas has been on a great run this year. They
And who do you credit that to?
Him.
Absolutely, you do.
But, another big thing to note about that game is Rice is actually who USF plays this upcoming week.
Yeah.
So that is a really good sign that, the USF Bulls could pull out another win, go to 9-3 for the fourth time in program history. I do like the sign that gives for the USF Bulls going down the line.
Yeah, but I really could see him, Drew Mastemaker, getting SEC offers. I think there's a real chance that he's, the Arkansas quarterback next year and potentially even making his way up to a first-round pick eventually.
Could very well be.
Now, moving on here, we'll get into some NFL slate, and then we're going to get on to the NFL primetime game this week, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers going away to the Los Angeles Rams.
Which we will have our Buccaneer specialist in the studio on about.
Absolutely. Now, just getting into some NFL, you know, just regular NFL, I want to bring up the Brandon Ayuk situation, and I asked you about it real quick, you know, kind of off air before while we were setting up. And if you haven't heard, Brandon Ayuk is coming back from an ACL tear, as most people know, but he is now quitting on the team and kind of just saying, I don't want to play for the 49ers anymore. And that brings up a conversation that I wanted to bring up, and we've seen the Buccaneers do this a lot. Do you think that NFL teams should not go after players if they have bad character or character concerns?
Well, I was actually about to make a point as the fact that if anyone on the Buccaneers, actually, instead of saying if anyone on the Buccaneers did that, that wouldn't happen on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, because the chemistry in the locker room is so important to the entire franchise. It goes down to Jason Light and Todd Bowles. They talk about it all the time, how crucial it is to have, you know, a positive mindset with everyone in the locker room, have everyone on the same page, have everyone with good chemistry. You know, if you have a guy that is genuinely just done with your team, is quitting on the team, and he thinks that he's either too good for the team or the, you know, the team just isn't doing enough for him as an individual, then he really shouldn't be there. He should be gone. He shouldn't deserve a spot on your team unless you can, you know, nurture him and change his mindset over time and, you know, assist him in the ways he needs. And maybe it's a fundamental issue with, you know, their coaching staff or their locker room. But I really don't think that players with that kind of character should deserve a spot on the roster unless they are superstar players, which Brandon Ayuk, the last few years, he's been good, don't get me wrong.
But he also is coming off of a torn ACL. The concerning thing to me is the fact that the 49ers are 7-4. This is not a bad team, you know. The 49ers have put up a great season, especially with starting Mac Jones, who obviously outperformed most people's expectations. But the 49ers have played amazing football. He's coming back to a winning team. He's obviously going to be the wide receiver one. And how do you just quit on the team like that? That's unexcusable.
I really have no idea.
In what world are you going to get paid $120 million, tear your ACL, have so much guaranteed money, and basically have enough money to where if you're smart, you have money for the rest of your life, and you're just going to quit and get all your money voided because you want to be a big baby at this point?
I just wonder what former Buccaneer safety John Lynch, their current general manager, thinks about this entire situation. You know, he's a very headstrong individual. You know, he's very smart, and I feel like he carries a little bit of that mentality of, you know, the locker room chemistry is important. So I am really curious to see as to what, you know, this entire 49ers organization is going to do towards Brandon Ayuk in the next following weeks, months, and going into the offseason eventually, where he'll end up.
And I like how you said that. I believe that former Tampa Bay Buccaneers safety John Lynch might actually take a page out of the Buccaneers book and start, you know, really prioritizing character over, you know, players, honestly. Because at the end of the day, if you've got a bunch of guys who want to work hard and they're talented, they are going to succeed in the NFL.
Definitely.
Now, another big storyline we have coming out of the NFL today before we get on to the primetime game is Shedeur Sanders will be making his first career NFL start. And we saw last week him go 4-for-16 with a fumble and a pick. Are you looking to see anything out of Shedeur here, or is this kind of just a wash-by backup quarterback situation?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say it's a wash-by secondary quarterback situation. I do have to say, though, it is kind of a litmus test for the future of the Cleveland Browns overall. You know, people say that Cleveland is where quarterbacks go to die, which, you know, in many ways is true. I don't know if anyone else saw this, but during the Halloween season, there was someone in Cleveland had their yard set up with graves mimicking all of the quarterbacks that had gone through Cleveland, either retired or just left soon. And there were more than 25 going back to the 1990s. And it was just absolutely crazy to see. And, you know, I hope Shedeur Sanders is able to find some success with this offense. Quinshon Judkins is out still, or
I don't know about that.
I don't quite know. But he does have some weapons to get the ball out to on offense, so I would expect that he could see some success. But then again, I'm not anticipating that he'll have a career game. I'm not anticipating that he'll have some, you know, standout performance. I'm going to imagine that it'll be very run of the mill, second string quarterback, first start rookie in the NFL sort of deal. I wouldn't try to expect anything crazy out of him. Just very, like I said, litmus test, run of the mill, keep your expectations low.
And he's a fifth-round quarterback. And he's a fifth-round quarterback, so you can't go into this game expecting him to throw four touchdowns, 80% completion percentage. The realistic sight is if he goes out there, he has a 55% completion percentage, he throws two touchdowns and a pick, and doesn't fumble or create any crazy turnovers or get sacked a bunch of times, making it his fault. I believe that that's a successful game for him.
Yeah, no, I mean, you really just want to see, can he hold it together? Can he stay mentally strong? You know, can he stay uplifted in the tough moments? Can he come back? Can he be a goldfish? Can he, you know, with the 10-second memory, can he just stay strong and be somewhat consistent? And if you can see at least some of that out of him today, I think he definitely has a shot at starting down the line.
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, Dillon Gabriel is still the better quarterback. I think he runs that offense better. And, you know, I kind of want to get into some Buccaneers football now.
Definitely.
We're going to bring the Buccaneers specialist, Aiden McDonough, on here. And
without a doubt. We're going to move the camera here in the studio so
you can
see him.
I'll go ahead and get up and move that. So I'll let you go ahead and take over here. But big Buccaneers game tonight, Sunday Night Football.
How are we doing, Mr. Aiden McDonough, our Buccaneers specialist in the studio? How are you doing today?
Pretty good, pretty good, you know. I'm really hyped for this Bucs-Rams game, you know. It really, you know, Bucs really have to prove tonight. If they want to get a win, they have to prove that they can beat a positive team.
Yeah, definitely. How do we feel about the Matthew Stafford versus Baker Mayfield matchup today? Who do you think is going to end up coming out with the bigger stats? Obviously, you know, the Rams are on a great run this season. Matthew Stafford's looking like an MVP type of candidate. But Baker Mayfield earlier in the season, he was also ranked as an MVP candidate. Do you think Baker Mayfield coming out against this Rams defense could show something that many people don't expect out of him?
I think there's always potential with Baker Mayfield. You know, like, we saw him playing, like, a little off the start of the season, you know. He was playing all right, but the completion percentage was definitely a lot lower than most people have seen, you know. Like, the week one game versus the Falcons, you know, he really, completion percentage was pretty low, and that's what he was known for last year, almost led the league. I think he did.
Yeah.
In completion percentage, but, you know, his stats have definitely been down. Interceptions have been down, too, but, you know, he really needs to prove that he can play against a team that's positive in order to get, like, this Bucs team rolling.
I agree. I think a lot of the thing of what it is Baker Mayfield earlier in the season wasn't completely, you know, we were getting wins and he wasn't throwing picks, but at the end of the day, he was missing a lot of throws. And I think that was the big thing about it. You know, you could sit there and say, oh, the stats look good, but he was missing the throws he should have made. The offense was clicking, but it really wasn't. So I think that's definitely a really good point about the, you know, early in the season struggles, even though there was some wins.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and the Seahawks game, though, was really a change. It really, really messed up what we were thinking about Baker. You know, he came out through four incomplete passes with, I think, 33 attempts, and then put up over 300 passing yards with three passing touchdowns. You know, and then beat the Seahawks. You know, the one win we do have against a positive team. I think if he can bring that here against the Rams, I feel like that'd be a great sign. It'd be a great sign for him to move up in that MVP
race. Do you think, because of how the Rams have performed this season, Baker Mayfield's going to kind of have that chip underdog mentality on his shoulder where he, you know, is just down working and is locked in the whole game? Or do you think he's going to be more of like, he's still trying to fight for that winning team sort of deal? Or, I mean, he's said before that he always plays with a chip on his shoulder, but do you think that's going to show up extra today?
I think so, yeah, but I think it mainly depends on the plays that, you know, are given to him. I think he'll put his best foot forward with the plays that he can run. He'll do the best he can with the plays that are given.
Definitely. And do you have any comments on Josh Grizzard's play calling this current season? You know, he's first year as an offensive coordinator. He was the third down guy last season for the most part. But do you have any comments on his play calling style? Maybe any comments on the screens that he runs or that sort of deal?
I'm not a fan of it. You know, the one play that really got me the most is when we were playing against, I can't remember what team it was, but it was 3rd and 9. You know, big down we had to get the first down, it'd be a game-changing play. Yeah. You had Sterling Shepard on the outside. We run a screen and press coverage. You know, it's not a smart play at all. You know, you have Emeka Egbuka out there that can really, it's been really great in our deep passing. He's really been our deep passing this year, you know, without Mike Evans and Chris Godwin for the most part. But
do you think in the absence of Mike Evans and Chris Godwin that part of the reason we've seen, especially in the latter part of this year, that Emeka Egbuka hasn't been getting as many touches is because that he's been doubled coverage and he's been schemed against as much as he possibly can?
I think that's main reason, yeah. I think, you know, without Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, you know, that's the big three we wanted to see going into this year, but obviously we didn't get to see Chris Godwin as much. And then Mike Evans with the collarbone injury, you know, it just sucks to see. But, yeah, now, you know, with, we had a really stacked wide receiver room. I like how Tez Johnson's kind of stepped up.
Definitely.
You know, he's been really good at the deep plays. He still has to, you know, get used to it because he is one of the smaller guys. He will be the smallest guy on the field every time he plays. So he kind of has to also play with that chip on his shoulder like Baker does every game.
And if you want a great place to watch this game, come down to Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, America's number one local sports bar as voted by USA Today. We are in the Body Armor Coca-Cola studios here. And this is just a great place to watch the game. There's over 120 TVs. Just an amazing place to watch.
I couldn't agree more. And going back to that conversation about the offensive play calling with Josh Gersard and the screens and whatnot, what I personally don't understand is, you know, I do like the way that he's working in the tight ends more. I would prefer to see the tight ends run more routes, you know, on the outside and the flats, whatnot. However, what I don't understand is talking about those same screen plays with Tez Johnson, the wide receiver. Why have I seen multiple times this season Tez Johnson, the lightest player to ever play in NFL history, making outside blocks on linebackers and corners to try to set up plays for the tight ends? That makes no sense. It should be the other way around, should it not? Tight ends should be blocking for smaller guys like Tez Johnson.
I think, you know, you make a good point there, but I think you do have to do that sometimes. And I do agree that he's doing it too much, but if you have every single time you're just going out there and you're running Kate Otten and Payne Durham to block for Tez Johnson, teams are going to pick up on that. And, you know, Tez Johnson, one, he's not going to block somebody successfully a very large majority of the time because it's just mass moves mass. But it does have to be more often than not Tez Johnson is getting blocked for and not blocking for other people.
I do like that. And another thing I like is Tez Johnson's his courage. You know, even though he is the lightest player in the NFL, he has without fail gone out for those blocks and blocked with his heart out every single time. You know, he always leaves his best play on the field. What do you think about that? And what do you think about, you know, obviously you kind of gave some comments about Tez Johnson already, but what do you think about Tez Johnson's future for this team? Do you think he could end up being like a kind of Sterling Shepard, Chris Godwin type of mesh player, or is he more of just like a general deep threat?
Well, I think he's going to hold that Sterling Shepard spot really well because we don't know if we're going to have Mike Evans for much longer. No one really knows how long he's
I do want to say this, though. Mike Evans is no longer in a cast. He was seen at the Magic game. And
Not just a cast, but not a sling either.
Not a sling either, yeah. And he was seen at the Magic game, but he did throw something, and we didn't see him go full overarm with a, you know, good spiral or anything. But he did throw, and it was sidearm. It was kind of lazy, but it's definitely a great step in the right direction of getting Mike Evans back this season.
Definitely, and I like the jersey you're wearing yourself. Evans, number 13, you know, one of the hallmarks of this Buccaneers organization overall. So crucial to this team, not only in his playing style, but also just going back to that original piece we were talking about, the chemistry that he builds in the locker room, the, you know, the energy that he has, especially with the younger guys, you know, mentoring them and, you know, giving them knowledge that he didn't even have coming into the league. So getting into the raw stats of this primetime matchup versus the Tampa Bay Buccaneers versus the Rams, total points, 47.5. Do you have the over or under on that, Aiden?
I'm going to have to take the over. I think both of these offenses are going to go at each other, just like when the Bills played the Bucks, really high scoring game. I think these defenses are going to fold just a little bit to these great offenses, you know. Talking about the defense too, Bucks, they're missing Jamel Dean.
Unfortunately, Jamel Dean has been one of the best players in this. Honestly, you can argue the best player on this team all season.
He's the top-ranked PFF corner in the entire NFL.
And I talked about that last week, too, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think also, too, Benjamin Morrison's also questionable. Hasn't been ruled in, hasn't been ruled out. So I really hope he can, like these younger corners like Jacob Parrish, maybe even see more Christian Izzy. Because I know Christian Izzy.
Where has he been at this year, man?
I don't know, but I know.
If you want to know where he's been at, he actually just bought a house the other day. He announced
it
on his personal.
Yeah, man. Come on. I mean, How about he shows up on the football field? All right, yeah, I don't want to know. I don't want to know if he's buying a house. I was really excited for him coming into the year. You know, I was kind of sad that we kind of replaced him with Tyke Smith moving to safety, pushing him down the depth chart, and then, you know, making him expected to be the nickel corner. And obviously, I'd much rather Parrish and Tyke Smith there, but I was excited to see Christian Izzy in the season.
And to cover the spread currently is Los Angeles by 7. Who do you have to cover that spread, Tampa Bay or Los Angeles?
Well, it really depends on how the Bucs defense comes and plays. If these young corners step up and play really good playing against the best wide receiver core I think they're going to play all season, then I think the Bucs can cover that spread by a wide margin. But if the defense doesn't come to play and the play calling isn't there, or if Baker's throws aren't there, I think I have to give that to the Rams.
Who do you see on Puka Nacua this evening?
Well, I think it's either got to be Zion McCollum or Jacob Parrish. They've been the two best corners besides Jamel Dean. Jacob Parrish has been great at stopping screen plays. He's been, you know, he's been great at covering coverage and everything. He's been great this season.
You know, I got to give a quick shout out to Jake. He's sitting right here. Jake, coming out of the NFL draft, he really said to really both of us, he was so excited about Jacob Parrish getting drafted. He was so high on him
that
coming out of Kansas State.
That kid is a baller.
Yeah, and, you know, he's been completely right about him this season. He has played his heart out. He has had such a good rookie season. He really looks like he could potentially be a top corner in the league someday, a top, you know, kind of nickel safety even. Just he plays so versatile, and he's just so good at what he does. And I honestly agree. I think Jacob Parrish really on Puka Nacua could be the best option for today, just because of how fast he is, how cerebral he is, how, you know, how he can read stuff better than really any other rookie in the league can. And one more thing, going back to, you know, how Jake was high on him, he really is one of the biggest steals in this year's NFL draft.
I think you can undisputedly say he is the biggest steal. I mean, when you look at it, like we saw with Puka Nacua in round 5 a few years back, there really hasn't been any, you know, late round 5th, 6th, you know, 3rd day draft picks that have been standout studs who have made immediate impacts. Now, could we see that? Absolutely, and, you know, it's almost guaranteed that we will eventually see that. But, you know, there is so – he is by far the best player picked. Honestly, you could even say picked 30 or later. You know, maybe yeah. Carson Sweshinger is close, but I think he's also the leading defensive rookie of the year candidate right now.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, going back to this conversation, none of us can really bet. So not that we're encouraging it, but we are kind of still kind of
we are going to read the lines and just make some fun predictions.
Give us a player to get 2+ receptions on the Bucs and a player to get 2+ receptions on the Rams.
Well, for the Rams, I think you can go with almost any of their starting receivers. You know, they really look for that passing play. Definitely with the Bucs' great run defense, I think they're going to look towards that pass a lot. So I think Puka Nacua and Davante Adams are both great options, because I see the Rams offense definitely getting into that red zone look, and when they get in the red zone, they're looking for Davante Adams.
Definitely.
It's been shown many times that
we saw it with the 3-touchdown game earlier, you know, a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of people overlooked Davante Adams after last season, you know, just because of how he played overall, and, you know, it was kind of a weird season for him, definitely,
yeah, but,
this season he has stepped up like no other.
Mm-hmm. I think the best way to get to, like, to prevent them from passing and prevent them to getting to the red zone, though, I think this defensive line has to step up. You know, Yaya Diaby, you know, missing out. Hassan Reddick has been ruled out again this week.
And
missing.
I have a
Kalijah
question about
Kansas.
That once you're done.
Yep.
So, should Bucs fans be concerned with the way that the injuries have been handled this season? You know, Hassan Reddick is going into his 4th missed game, still hasn't practiced yet. Bucky Irving hasn't played since week 4. It's now week 12, and he is still not playing. He's expected to come back next week. Chris Godwin missed, you know, what was it, 8 weeks as well. There's been so many players this season, key players that have, and Chris Godwin actually had a broken fibula.
Yeah, I did see
that. And
they
didn't place him on the IR. I mean, Is there any concern there with how the Buccaneers have handled injuries, or is this just
another one was Jalen,
you know, unfortunate
Jalen McMillan with the broken portions of his neck? That was another one.
I don't think he should have even been in the preseason, like, as late as he was. I know, obviously, you want to get your guys in, make sure they're football ready for the regular season, but, you know, it's partially on Jalen McMillan's fault, but also on the coaching. Like, I don't think he obviously shouldn't be making those outstanding plays. You know, it's the preseason. You want to you want to show the skills you got. But
with how the receiver room did look, he did have to go out there and improve himself, or else he was going to be the wide receiver for, you know. Emeka Egbuka obviously really impressed, but going into the season, you got Mike Evans, Chris Godwin as the 1-2, Emeka Egbuka and Jalen McMillan as the 3-4, and, you know, those guys are really battling for spots, so he does, I believe he does have to go out there and really prove himself.
I do see that, yeah, because Emeka Egbuka really is now showing that he's at the minimum a wide receiver 2 on this team. I could easily say he should be the wide receiver 1, even if Mike Evans does come back with the way he's been playing. And the ways that, you know, Baker really looks for him in this squad. He likes looking deep. He likes looking him short. You know, that's his guy. I think
that's another thing with offensive coordinator Josh Cozart, is Baker Mayfield naturally kind of does like to look deep. He has a great arm, and Josh Cozart has not been harnessing that arm in the last few games.
Yeah, I do see that. But also one thing to get the deep play more, like, I think if we want to start passing more deep, we have to start, which I did. We did see last week when, you know, when Cade Otton did have a great game. He had like nine or eight catches with 87,
yeah, which was
97
season, maybe even a tied for career high, I believe.
Yeah, I think we have to start getting him like no touchdowns. I'm pretty sure it still stands. No touchdowns.
No touchdowns for a tight end all season for the Buccaneers.
And I know he's not really the touchdown target we're looking for all the times, you know,
but
I think we
that
have
also
to.
Brings up another conversation with Josh Grizzard's play calling is we saw earlier in the season he tried running a fade ball to Sterling Shepard. Is there a scenario where he goes out there and puts Cade Otton on the outside and tries to run a fade ball to Cade Otton since Mike Evans is the absence right now?
Well, it's better than throwing Sterling Shepard out there. Sterling Shepard is a smaller guy.
5'11", 6 foot tall.
Yeah, he's a playmaker at most. You know, you give him the ball short, he can make plays. You let him slip through defenses with these shorter routes, medium routes, deeper routes, you know. Almost every rise, he can slip through there, but he's not a fade ball type of guy.
Absolutely,
He won't be able to fill the role that Mike Evans had.
And going back to this, the bet talk. Give me an interesting one. You know, there are a lot of locks you could probably give. Kind of give me an interesting one if you can think of one on either team, a player to score an anytime touchdown today.
You know, although this, you know, I would like to say Devontae Adams. You know, because it's always their red zone look. But this Bucs defense has been really bad at tackling in the open field. You know, we've seen like week one, Bijan Robinson, the Falcons' first touchdown of the year, came on a big play by Bijan. Obviously, a short catch out the field. He just took it all the way. And also with Jahmyr Gibbs, you know, when we played the Lions, he had a huge game just
overall.
After the
and we were
yeah.
watching that game. You
yeah,
know?
You know, we
just it was just a horrible game from the Buccaneers all around.
That, yeah, you know, offense. Baker was missing throws. We couldn't get the run game fully down.
And in a couple of ways, when you look at this defense and when you watch on the actual field and you're watching these third and mid distances, the defense, a lot of the safeties in the corners will play behind the line of gain. And it makes no sense at all. And that kind of leads me to my next question to you about many people are questioning Todd Bowles again, you know, as to is he the thing that is holding this team back? Is him and the head of training staff part of the reasons that this Buccaneers team is being held back so much? Do you think that Todd Bowles is part of the reason that this team is being held back so much? Or do you think that Todd Bowles is one of the reasons why this team had such a strong start to begin the year with?
Well, I think it's a mixture of both, you know. He likes implementing the blitzes a lot. He does it majority of his downs. He likes to send the blitz, which does work out really good for us sometimes, which can get us like big sacks in some plays. You know, gets us the picks with the pressure coming off the side, you know. Like leading to Jamel Dean, that's why he has a lot of his picks. We send the pressure off one side, force like a bad throw, and, you know.
And Jamel, how about Dean's Jamel been, Dean actually catching the ball?
Yeah, you
when
know.
When he gets it thrown to him. I mean, that's not, the most impressive part to me.
He has not had defensive backhands this season. He's looked like a full-blown receiver.
I mean, it's a pleasure to watch. And that goes back to the conversation of us, you know, him truly being the best corner in the NFL.
Yeah, I do like that. You know, there's been other corners that have really showed, but I think Jamel Dean has been the biggest step-up corner there has been, you know.
Definitely.
Like, obviously, there's corners like PS2, you know, Quinyon Mitchell has continued to play great this year, but I think Jamel Dean off the real fall off he had last year, you know, there's plenty of times where he's let up big hitches, he's been beat deep, you know. I like how he's really stepped up this year, got the interceptions, he's been really great with his PFF grade, and like the QBR allowed, it's been great.
Absolutely. Definitely. Now, that kind of brings up a conversation that I want to bring up, and I've seen a lot of people on Twitter, which is obviously, I said this earlier, it's full of trolls, but there's been a lot of people and a lot of talk of people saying this team will never do anything with Todd Bowles. Do you believe in that, or are you kind of on the other side?
I don't believe in that at all. I think if we get the right offensive coordinator, we get the right defensive pieces, we get offense starts playing the right way. Like, I think with the offense we have right now with Bucky Irving, like, if we do make the playoffs, you know, if we get Mike Evans back. I know I heard Chris Godwin has been playing really well at practice. You know, he's been practicing full participant, I'm pretty sure.
Which there is, you know, he will be playing tonight.
Yeah, I heard he will be playing tonight.
On a what they're calling a pitch count.
Yeah,
so
but what,
that,
the only
that's
thing
definitely
that,
big news.
The only thing that does suck going into this game was the illness that went around the Bucks. Around the Bucks, you know.
Coming from the cold.
Yeah, coming from the cold, you know, like a lot of, we don't have really full, like major players weren't full participants in practice earlier in the week.
I believe there were over 11 people, including players and coaching staff, that were affected by an illness.
Yeah, and Baker was one of them, you know.
And it seemed like the whole offensive line was also there. Maybe something, you know, one guy got sick during the game because of the cold, and he just spread it around through the whole offense.
Yeah, I know. Ben Bredesen is going to be out talking about that offensive line, which really makes, pretty sure, is Ben Feeney, Dan Feeney?
Dan Feeney.
He really needs to step up in that guard position because, you know,
the guard position is lacked this year.
Yeah, the guard position has really been down, and now missing Ben Bredesen, it really does suck. But, you know, we really have to step up at that offensive line, make sure Baker has the right pocket to make those great passes. I know those incomplete passes, can't really say what it's been on. You can't like definitively say it's been Baker, it's been the pressure, it's been the coverage. It's hard to really see, but the first thing you always want to look at is his pocket.
Well, yeah, last season Baker had a much healthier offensive line, a much more consistent offensive line, and you saw him making a lot more big plays. That's why his completion percentage partially was so high. And, you know, you haven't seen that this season. Another thing is Kevin Carberry, the offensive line coordinator, especially the offensive run coordinator. The pass protections have been absolutely awful. The play designs have been awful. I talked about this briefly last week. Why do we have Mike Jordan running pin-pull blocks for pass protection on a four-down front? It makes absolutely no sense. You know, you have guys, if there is a complicated blitz coming your way, you want to switch up your offensive line. You want to run pin-pull blocks just to kind of, you know, give your quarterback a chance to get out of the pocket and make a play. But when there's a simple four-down front and we're running pin-pull blocks with Mike Jordan or Dan Freeney, it makes absolutely no sense. And that's where I don't really agree with Kevin Carberry, the offensive line coordinator, or Josh Grizzard in that sense.
And, you know, you can bring that up with injuries, you know, because at the end of the day, it is hard to get guys in the right scenario when you have to rotate them out so much. But Todd Bowles, I believe earlier in the year, said this, you know, everybody's on the roster for a reason, and injuries aren't an excuse, but are you kind of concerned with the injuries this year, and are you putting that kind of on the face of why the team isn't succeeding, or are you kind of just saying this is a coaching issue?
Well, I have to say, you know, you can say injuries, injuries, injuries for really any team in the NFL.
Absolutely.
Because it's part of the game. Every team will see injuries. It's a very physical sport. However, I firmly believe that if the Buccaneers hadn't had, you know, so many crucial season-ending injuries this season, Cody Mauch, Kalijah Kancey, Mike Evans, potentially, you know, Chris Godwin being out for weeks, Bucky Irving being out since week four, offensive line injuries all around. It's been a revolving door. There was parts where we had Graham Barton starting at left tackle. You know, Luke Goedeke was out for a good portion of the season. I feel like if they could find and hold on to some type of consistency in anything, then I feel like they could do much better. I feel like consistency, funny enough, is really what they're lacking.
I agree. You know, when you look at it, the Bucs have had great games against great teams. You know, bring up that Seahawks game again with Baker Mayfield throwing, like he said, four incompletions and four touchdowns and, you know, really just playing a perfect game of football. There's also been a time where we haven't seen the Bucs really play good at all. You can bring up losses, but you can also bring up wins where the Bucs, the offense just looks like a shell of itself last year, and you know, you can definitely bring that up on play calling as well.
All right, well, before you get off the show, thank you so much for coming on. I do want to have a quick segment. I know you are a Bucs specialist, but just because we're on the topic of general NFL sports.
with
I'm gonna go down the line, and I want both of you guys to give me your predictions for just a win or a loss.
You gotta join in too.
Yeah, just for a win or a loss as to the slate of NFL games. All right, Jets at Ravens.
I think I have to give it to the Ravens.
It's the Ravens.
This Jets team has played so awful. Justin Fields has been bad. They're going to straight rebuild. Traded Sauce Gardner, which I think was a great trade for their team.
And
what
Quinton
they
Williams.
Got out of it, yeah, and Quinnen Williams too. You know, but I think what they got out of it was pretty great.
I agree. I think it's going to be the Ravens all the way. Steelers at the Bears.
This is, I think, one of the most contested matchups. You know, I think Bears will end up taking it just because Aaron Rodgers has been ruled out. I think he's been pretty great.
Yeah, Will Howard now, former Ohio State quarterback, is going to be starting.
I heard it was Mason.
Is it Mason Rudolph?
I heard it was Mason Rudolph.
Give me the Bears.
Under the assumption.
Give me the Bears.
Yeah, I'm also going to go with the Bears.
Give me the Bears.
Patriots at Bengals. Give me the Patriots.
Give me the
Patriots easily.
Don't even need to talk
one more
about
week,
that one.
One more week and no Joe Burrow.
Giants at the Lions. Give me the Lions.
Give me the Lions.
Lions, yeah, I think the Lions all the way.
Vikings at the Packers. Give me the Packers.
Well, I'm going to go with the Vikings. I would like to see the Vikings win this one. Josh Jacobs just got ruled out.
That's
true. He just got ruled out, like, I think about an hour ago.
I do just have to say, though, I cannot see 9 winning this game at all. Absolute cornball. Colts at Chiefs.
I think the Chiefs are going to pull out this one.
I believe that as well.
I think, you know, this Colts team has been great, but I think Patrick Mahomes is going to lock in. Well, you know, with Rashee Rice, I think
I just can't see them being below 500.
I think the 8-2 Chiefs are the 8-2 Colts are actually going to beat the Chiefs today because this is the first time they've been even questioned as to if they're going to make the playoffs this year, which right now they don't have a playoff spot, and I think that's affecting their morale a lot. And I think this Colts team is on a great run right now. I think the Colts will take that one. Mm-hmm. Seahawks at the Titans.
Seahawks, yeah, easy.
Seahawks.
We don't even need
way.
That's no, just
no Jaguars at the Cardinals. Give me the Cardinals.
I'm gonna have to go Jaguars.
You know, yeah. I know Travis Hunter got ruled out for the rest of the season, but also no Marv.
Yeah,
we're still not for sure if Kyler's
no Kyler.
Playing.
He's yeah. on no the Kyler. IR. Kyler's
no
on
Kyler.
The IR.
No Kyler has actually been great for this Cardinals team. They've been doing much better without Kyler.
Yeah, they just haven't
been
racking up the wins though. You know, I mean, great win against the Cowboys, but.
Yeah, I just have to say that Jacoby Brissett has been playing a very good brand of football. He's absolutely revitalized his career, and I would like to see a win out of the Cardinals today. Browns at the Raiders. Real, unstoppable force meets a movable object.
Yeah,
this is a horrible matchup, but I'm going to go with the Raiders just because they're the home team.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Raiders, especially now that Geno Smith is no longer starting.
Yeah, I would want to say the Browns just because how good Myles Garrett's been, but I think I have to go with the Raiders.
All right, Eagles at the Cowboys.
It's
give me
the
Eagles.
You think it's the Eagles? I think I really want the Cowboys to win this one. I know I really like upsets, but...
Going back to our first episode
man.
Of the entire year, these are the two individuals in which I placed a bet against that Dak Prescott would not be the comeback player of the year. I owe them each $20 separately if he is the comeback player of the year. So, yes, I would like to stick with those Eagles at home. Falcons at the Saints. NFC South matchup there.
I think the spread is to the Saints, but I think the Falcons, still having Bijan and stuff. I think
Michael Penix Jr. is out.
Yeah, they're
going to. For
gonna,
the season now.
Yeah,
and
for the season.
Maybe even early 2026.
I think they're going to revolve this game around Bijan. I think they're going to let him cook.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate you coming on and, giving all your knowledge. Thank you so much, Aiden McDonough, and have a good day.
Absolutely. You guys too.
Now, let's get into some Trop updates before we wrap up here. And. If you haven't heard, Tropicana Field is back to 28 out of 28 panels, and that's just big news for the Bucks or for the Rays. Sorry, so much Bucks talk, still
yeah,
on
oh,
my
yeah,
mind.
No,
yeah.
It's still on my mind, too. Don't worry.
Yeah. So the Rays will be back at Tropicana Field right across the street from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, a great place to come watch the game if you're not going to, go inside the stadium, but you definitely should.
I completely agree. 24 out of 24 is so great to hear. I'm just, the kid in me that went to all those Rays games at Tropicana Field is so absolutely thrilled that the Tropicana Field is back together. The old gray lady is really back. And I truly wonder, I didn't get to ask this personally to Ken Babby when we had him right here, sitting here in the studio the other night. But I am kind of curious as to if the Fan Fest in February will be held at the Trop or if they're going to hold it at another location or if they're not going to hold it at all.
Yeah, and that's definitely a great place, definitely a great conversation to have. We should have definitely asked him that. But I want to ask you this, kind of Tropicana feel, just some old memories. Do you think the Rays should sign Kevin Kiermaier to be an outfield coach?
No.
You don't think so?
I do not think so. I've heard very minor talks about that, but
he made a post on Twitter and he said, I want to be an outfield coach. I want to help your team with defense.
It's very interesting. Like I said earlier, it's kind of an interesting prospect, but I just don't really see it. You know, I just don't really see him as a great coach, especially because, you know, he might teach some players to be selfish and knock some other players out like Randy Arozarena to go get the ball, which is not the type of brand we want to see in the Rays baseball.
But I think him going out there and helping, you know, a Josh Lowe or, you know, even a Jake Mangummer, Chandler Simpson even, would be amazing for this team.
You could always use a tenured player, but we are wrapping up. This has been Between the Lines, live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill on Radio St. Pete's Florida Sports Streams and YouTube.